hello. I am Sarah Underwood. I am 33 years old. Today's date is Sunday, December 8th, 2019. We are in not so sunny, Yuma, Arizona. And my interview partner is Leah. I just met you today, but it was a pleasure to meet you.
Hi, my name is Leah Zickmund. I'm 23 years old. Mm-hmm. Today's date is Sunday, December 8th, 2019, and we're in Yuma, Arizona. Mm-hmm. My interview partner is Sarah Underwood, and we just met, and hopefully you'll be my new friend today.
Aww.
So since we just met, I mm-hmm. have a lot of things that I want to ask you about. Mm-hmm. I'm curious. Why don't you tell me a little bit about maybe what you want to talk about today?
excuse me. Well, it's been in my head a lot that I kind of wanted to talk about mental illness and mm-hmm. my relationship with that and how I see that in society, how it affects my life, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Can I ask you when you first became aware of mental illness?
If you mean like in personally or as like a social concept? Like,
I guess either, whichever one you prefer to answer.
Well, I think, to be completely honest, I don't think I've ever known reality in my own life where I wasn't mentally ill. Like, mm-hmm. I've always known. It was one of those things I always had a really hard time making friends. I was always very socially awkward. I would stress out about stuff and other people wouldn't be stressing out about it. And I'd kind of be running around with my hair on fire. Like, how are you guys not freaked out right now? Stuff like that. It's just, you know, after a while you notice like you're limping and everyone else isn't. And so I've just always kind of known that something was off with me. Mental illness wasn't something we discussed in my family. My mother is profoundly mentally ill, but we don't have a relationship. So even though there was mental illness there, it wasn't something we ever talked about. It wasn't ever something that was really introduced to me. So it was kind of, I didn't really start understanding the mechanics of it and stuff until I was a lot older. But I think I've pretty much since I was born, there's always been something a little squeaky wheel with me that I've noticed myself.
And so at what point did you feel like you needed to do something about it?
It was after the loss of my daughter when it was a little backstory. I was going through a divorce and excuse me. It was a pretty contentious divorce. It was just the beginnings of it. And I found out I was pregnant. And I was like, oh, no. Okay, here we go. So I was navigating the divorce and all that stuff. And then I ended up at 36 weeks. We had a nuchal cord issue and she was stillborn. And it was during that time, just with the stress and the pressure of everything, I just knew something was wrong, you know. And it was the grief on top of everything else and my anxiety and stuff was just getting to the point where I was being robotic and I wasn't functioning properly. I was getting things done, but I just knew like, this is not good. Right. And so, kind of in part with that, but also in part of, I wanted to make sure that I could keep proper custody of my kids and stuff like that. I said, you know what, just for the betterment of everything, I'm just going to go to the doctor and I'm going to talk to them. I'm going to say to them, this is what's going on. Maybe try to get some grief counseling, what have you. And that was when I talked to, I believe she's a clinician, and she actually formally diagnosed me at that point.
And do you want to talk about your diagnosis?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I have no problem with that. My formal diagnosis is I have depression and OCD with complicating anxiety. She also said that I'm symptomatic for PTSD as well.
Would you care to explain what that is for people who might not understand what all those things mean?
Certainly. It's the best way that I can explain it, at least as far as the OCD and the anxiety, it's if you can imagine you have a head full of bees. And I know that sounds really weird and that's very confusing, but that's literally what it is. It's always noisy and there is always motion. There's always something. There's always a thought. It's my OCD and my anxiety work. They feed off of each other, essentially. It's so I'll get very stressed out about something and then my obsessive compulsive will just make me think about it and think about it and think about it and think about it to the point where it's 2 days later after something has happened and my brain is still going about it and thinking about every worst case end of the world scenario that can come from that and stuff like that. The depression is a lot different. The depression is more, I just start thinking poorly about everything. It's everything goes a little bit gray. It's thankfully, I haven't experienced in any real way any sort of self-harm ideation or anything like that. But it's just, it's kind of like having a weighted blanket, and it's not in a comforting way. Because I know to some people that would be like, oh, it's, you know, it's comfort. It's not. It's just this dulling just weight that just settles onto you. And when you're having that and also having anxiety, it's this weird going a million miles an hour, but also going nowhere at the exact same time. And they feed off of each other, but at the same time, they're also they don't. And so there's a lot of ways that it just causes a lot of problems, to put it that way. It's like a head full of bees, going a million miles an hour, going nowhere at the same time. That's the best way I can describe it, I think.
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. As soon as you said head full of bees, I was like, yeah, that's a, it's a really good way of putting it into words. I've had my own ways of trying to put it into terms that make sense. Mm-hmm. But do you feel misunderstood?
I think a lot of the times, yeah, because people, they'll think that I'm OCD. And when I say they'll think that I'm OCD, like they'll get this impression of me. They'll see my behavior, or they'll see my attitude or whatever, and they'll say, oh, well, I already know what that's like because I've seen it on TV, or oh, I've seen it on I read a news thing that said that. And it's like people get this impression, and they judge you based on their perception of what it is, and they don't really have a reality because they don't live with it, or they don't know anybody that has it. So when I mean people know people with depression. Everybody has depression, you know, like whatever. That's a thing. But so people, oh, well, I was sad one time. I know what that's like. No, you don't. It's not the same thing. Or, oh, I get anxious sometime. Just try not being anxious. Like, oh, I've been anxious. I know what that's like. No, you don't. Like, you're anxious and my anxious are different. Like, you're anxious makes you go, when you're leaving the grocery store, my anxious keeps me up till 4 a.m. thinking about, did I put my debit card back in my wallet, even though I've checked it 4 times? Like, so I think people, they see it as more of a comical thing, or they see it as, oh, well, you must not really have it because you're not over here washing your hands 20 times. Like, it's just the perception, I guess, that people think that they know what it is and they don't, or they don't understand it fully. And so it makes them have these ideas of how it should present. Well, you can't be really depressed because you're smiling right now. Well, yeah, but you take a backhoe and you dig down a little bit. There's a whole lot of ugly, you know, so it's, yeah.
What do you wish that people would say to you or ask you about what you're experiencing?
I wish they would just ask, honestly, just ask honest questions. You know, if you're curious about something, or if you think something and you might be wrong, you know, just ask me. I'm very, very open with it. The way that I see it is, if I'm open about my experiences, I know that, you know, as we had mentioned, everybody's on a spectrum, right? Everybody has something going on with them. So I kind of feel like if I'm open about my experiences, then it'll help people not feel so weird about theirs. And so it's just, yeah, just if you have questions, just ask me. Like, don't assume things. You know what I mean? Just, you know, is it weird? Does it ever keep you up at night? Yes. Well, tell me what that's like. It's a heck of a head full of bees. You know what I mean? Like, just genuine questions. Mm-hmm. You know, don't make it like it's a weird thing, because it's not to me. Like, I'm very open about it. I'll talk about it. So it's anything that anybody has that they want to know. I'm pretty much an open book.
That's really cool. And I hear that a lot from people saying that they want to share their experiences so that other people feel less alone in what they're experiencing. I'm curious if you've had experiences like that recently where you shared what you were going through and it kind of created an avenue for other people to share.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. There was, for about 2 years or so, I was an online DJ, and I had, it's now defunct, may it rest in peace, Radio KOL. But I was on there and I was very open about my experiences. And because I know a lot of people in the community, you know, it was based on the Kingdom of Loathing. You've probably never heard of it. No one ever has.
Do you want to share what it is?
Well, it's an online role-playing game, but it's all text-based. And there was a whole scandal there, so I won't give it any more press. But the whole community that was built around that, we became like a family. And the radio community became like a family. And I was just always very open about it. I was very open about my beliefs, religious, political, everything else. But I was also very open about struggling with mental illness, because I had gone through this huge thing with the loss of my daughter and my divorce and all these other life changes that were happening. So if I'm going to be honest and open about that, I'm going to be open and honest about my mental health as well. And so, yeah, I would have these conversations where I wouldn't play music. I would just talk for 2 hours and I would say, this is what it's like. You know, this is why it bothers me when I see this on the news, or, you know, oh, this school shooter must have been crazy. Well, don't paint us like that. You know, and I would have these in-depth conversations about it, kind of by myself, but people would be chatting in the text, you know, and I would be talking to them about it. And there were some people that did reach out to me privately and they said, you know, you pushed me to get help. Like, I'm going to go talk to somebody. This isn't weird. You know, I'm not, or, you know, hey, can I reach out to you and talk to you about it? Sure. You know, because ultimately, you know, we're all in this together as a community and just as a society. And it's like, you know, if there are people that feel like they don't have someone to reach out to, that's how you get people that kill themselves, you know, or they drive the car off a bridge because they have an episode or something, you know what I mean? So those of us that are on a little bit more stable footing, I think, need to kind of advocate for that. And that's what I tried to do with
my
show. Yeah,
I'm curious about that because I feel like sometimes when people are really, really forthcoming about what they're experiencing, mm-hmm. they are obviously more of a safe space for other people. But mm-hmm. then, like, at what point does it become a burden to that person? Yeah. And when do you take care of yourself? So, like, have you mm-hmm. dealt with that? Have you found a way to separate?
Not really. To be honest, I am terrible at self-care. I have been accused of having a Messiah complex a couple times. Well, you take care of everyone else and you never take care of yourself. Yeah, pretty much. I'm a work in progress, honestly, and I'm trying to figure out how to do that because, you know, I know that I can't, you know, lift any ships if I'm sinking myself, sort of thing. And so I'm not good at that. I'm learning. It's a learning process.
Yeah.
It definitely is.
What is self-care when you are doing it? What does it look like? Because I also feel like this is such a conversation now about mm-hmm. like the commodification of self-care and the way that we treat it. And I am so curious like what your for real ways of mm-hmm. caring for yourself are.
I think it's really important. And I think you phrased it correctly in the commodification. It's this, oh, well, I woke up and I felt sad, so I went and had a coffee and didn't do my laundry. Like, it's not like that. I think self-care is it's important in that you have to do something that pulls you out of that space. So mm-hmm. if it means getting your nails done because you've had a really bad week at work and you're just out of spoons and you have to do something nice for yourself, do it. For me, it's I go and I lay in the grass at the park sometimes. I get out, I go and drink coffee, or I turn my phone off and I say, I'm not talking to anybody that I don't want to talk to you right now. You know, your guys' stuff is important, but I got to do me for a little bit. And I just go have coffee. Like, I go to North End and I have coffee because I like the vibe and go someplace where I'm comfortable. Or just, sometimes it's just laying in bed and watching YouTube videos of, I don't know, serial killers or whatever it is that I'm into at that point. Because I love abnormal psychology. Who'd have thought? So, yeah, I mean, it's just, it's doing something that isn't a negative to anyone else, but also helps you feel like you're in a better place, if that makes sense. Mm. And I think that can mean anything to anybody. I mean, some people it's drawing, some people it's going out and spending lots of money. As long as you can pay your rent, I mean... And as long as you're not taking it from someone else's bank account, you know, that would be the harmful part. But yeah, I mean, I just, for me, it's just doing something where I'm by myself or spending time with somebody. Even self-care for me can be spending time with a friend of mine who I can connect with and we're very similar. And it's just, we're just going to hang outside your house and we're just going to talk about whatever it is we're going to talk about. And even that can be because it's the sense of community of just not being alone, if that's what I feel like I need. It's just, I don't want to be alone right now. I want to have a conversation with somebody who doesn't stress me out, whose energy doesn't dip me, because people can be energy vampires a lot, if that makes sense. And other people's energy, if it conflicts with mine, it really can pull me down and it can really bother me and it just drains me. So yeah, being around people who have similar energy to me, that definitely helps too.
Mm. Mm. How do you identify, like, how do you know when you're drained from being with someone?
It's a physical thing, honestly. Like, it's just, I get this feeling of just, ugh, and it's like tightness a little bit. Kind of like if you're, I don't even know how to explain it. Like, if you're in an elevator and it's not moving fast enough. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Where you're just like, I'm in this enclosed in space with these three other people in this elevator, and I just want to get out of here. Like, it's kind of like that a little bit, where mm-hmm. it's maybe we're sitting in your backyard, there are fences, and it's an open backyard, but you just, your energy, no, I need to get out of here because you're pushing in on me, is kind of what it feels like. And it's just like your energy pushing on me is pushing my energy down, and I have to get out of here. Mm-hmm. It's that sort of thing. Or if I just start noticing that my, whatever my component of my depression is, like if I start having like, oh, you're this or you're that in my head, then I'm like, oh, okay, they're dipping into my reserves. I got to get out of here. Because if I know that I'm very symptomatic. So if I start getting more tired, I might, other stuff starts being more symptomatic, if that makes sense. Mm. So that's if like I notice my other stuff starting to happen, I'm like, oh, okay, no, I have to take a step back. This is too much. Because if I get to a certain point, then I'm just going to be too low to be able to function, and I don't want to deal with that. Mm. I don't know if any of that makes sense.
That makes honestly, that makes a lot of sense. And I'm realizing like how verbose you are with talking about how mm-hmm. you understand your own mental illness. And it seems like this is not your first time like no. understanding this. I know you said it's been a lifelong thing, but like mm-hmm. where did you get the vocabulary to talk about what you're experiencing, and like how have you learned mm-hmm. to speak about what you're going through?
Well, I had I came up pretty poor. We didn't have a lot of money, and it was kind of a rough, you know, we just were really poor. And so I never really had the chance to have medical health, you know, or mental health treatments or anything like that. And then that being poor kind of continued into adulthood. And so I knew that there was something kind of wrong, and I did a lot of research on my own to kind of see what was, you know, well, what could this be? You know, everybody, WebMDs themselves, but it was kind of that, but like mental stuff. And so I'm just, you know, so when I got the diagnosis, it was, oh, yeah, okay. But I knew that there was one of two options. I can either try to get on medicine, which, because I'm poor, if I get a better job, I might lose insurance. I might not be able to get medication. Or I can try to do the other thing, which is just try to get myself up, I hate the term, but by my bootstraps, you know, and try to kind of keep myself or learn how to keep myself okay. Because what if I can't get medicine, you know, and then that is a whole other thing. And you have to come off of medication that's psychotropic, and then maybe you're suicidal, and I'm not dealing with any of that. Like, I would rather just try to be able to learn coping mechanisms and deal with it myself. That way, in case all of that's not there, I still have the ability to hold up my own foundation. And so, yeah, I mean, I've just done a lot of research. I also didn't have a lot of company when I was coming up either. Like, I didn't have a lot of friends and stuff like that. So I just sat around reading and just learning and writing and all that kind of stuff. So I just kind of, it's knowledge. And I'm interested in abnormal psychology, so that kind of tied into it as well. And I've done a lot of research involving that and how that relates to me and stuff like that. So yeah, I just I've seen it as a benefit to become educated about it, and that kind of, I've always enjoyed speaking and stuff. So it's kind of like, well, if that kind of goes in part with it. Like if I can learn something and I know something and I can help someone with it, then I'll go and learn more, because then I can go and help more people with it, if that makes sense. So yeah, it's all kind of fed into itself a little bit.
And where were you raised?
Here.
Here in Yuma?
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me about your family?
Yeah. So the story goes that my mom met my dad in the laundromat, like over by where I went to elementary school. my family had moved here. My dad's side of the family had moved here from Illinois. They were here. My dad was like 30-ish, met my mom in a laundromat of all places. They were together for a couple years. They had me. She kind of had a lot of stuff going on with her mentally. There was a lot of, like I said, she was significantly mentally ill. There was a lot. She'd actually been in a facility for a while. And then she did a runner and she took me, and my dad went and got me and brought me back here. And that was pretty much it. Like, I've lived here my whole life with my dad, being a single parent, with my grandparents. May they rest in peace. But yeah, that was it. I mean, I have an uncle in town, but we aren't really close. I have a cousin. We're really not close. a lot of history there. But yeah, so it's just kind of been me and my dad and my grandparents. My mom lives in Michigan, but we don't talk. It was the only way, and I use a lot of metaphors and stuff, but that's kind of the only way I know how to talk. I learn it, honestly, from my dad. he talks like a farmer. Like, well, you know, sometimes if you have a problem with your giddy-up, you just have to put a new battery in your truck. That's the kind of person my dad is, and I learned that from him. So I apologize for that. But yeah, I mean, I just kind of didn't, I kind of lost my train of thought there for a second. but that's my family. Like, we don't have a lot of close people and stuff. And so I make my family for what it's worth. I pull in people because I don't have any siblings or anything. So,
tell me about your chosen family.
They are very dear to me. It's funny because I know that she's going to listen to this and she's going to go, heh, when she hears this. I have a friend, Megan, and over, this is going to sound so dumb, over the last couple months, she's become like a best friend. She couldn't be here today, unfortunately, because anxiety issues and stuff. But yeah, she's become like a best friend. I see her as like a sister, you know. We're very much on the same wavelength, and we get each other, and we have the same weird interests. And
like what? What weird interests do you share?
Serial killers and true crime and animals. She has a couple animals, and they're cute, and I like animals, but I refuse to have any. Because where I live, I have like 7 dogs, and I'm like, no. But yeah, and we've known each other since high school. We met when we were freshmen in French class at Yuma High, which is a couple blocks that way. That way. I don't know. Anyway. but yeah, I would say she's probably my best friend. Like I said, she's going to laugh when she hears that. But, and then I have some people I consider sisters. This girl, Vivian, that I met, 2009, the same year I got married, I met her. She lives in Tucson. But we're very close and we have a lot of ways that we're different, but, whenever she needs something, she knows I'm there. And we have a really weird way we communicate, but it's good. and then I've got my friend Johnny. I've known her the same amount of time as the other person who was supposed to be here, about 15 years. And we've gone through hell and back with each other, and we've went through so much. And yeah, it's like that's my little circle of family.
That's really great that you've been able to cultivate that for yourself.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
I'm curious what you think your friends would say if I asked them to describe you.
Aside from a complete mess. No, I don't know. Honestly, I'm not really sure. I mean, I kind of know. I know what Viv would say. Viv would say, she's a survivor. And I am the most reluctant survivor that you'll ever meet. I don't like calling myself that, but I know that's probably how she would describe me. Because when I was going through the whole situation with my daughter and everything, she told me a bunch of times, she's like, I don't know how you're alive right now. She's like, I would have just ended it. I would have driven my car off a bridge. I don't know how you've put up with it. Everything that you've gone through, I don't know.
Why didn't you?
I don't know. I guess, well, I know why now. Because, you know, I wouldn't want to do that to my kids, because I do have 2 daughters. In mixed company, I speak about them very, very little, just because internet and stuff. But I wouldn't. I've seen how when other people that I know have lost parents to, you know, drug addiction or, you know, self-harm or whatever, you know, any kind of thing that's kind of traumatic, I've seen how it affects them. And I can't imagine a world in which I'd be okay doing that to my kids, because that's something that's just going to break them forever. And once I'm gone, I don't have to deal with it anymore, but that's something that I'm going to leave with them. And I can't see myself damaging them in that way, because that's going to carry on until they die. And I just do no harm. You know, I don't see myself wanting to hurt my kids in that kind of way that I would be comfortable in any reality doing that. And then on top of it, the other people around me too, you know, I have my support system, and they would, probably their first reaction would be very angry, but the second reaction would be, you know, all the thoughts of why didn't she talk to me? Like, what is it? What did I not do? And I don't want to put that doubt on anybody. You know, when it comes down to it, you know, I mean, I've had bad days and I've thought about it sometimes. You know, I had complete clarity. I've had a plan once, you know, and I didn't go through with it because it was just, you know what? whatever it is, I've gone through bad stuff. And it's like, if I can go through that stuff, then me losing my job's not the biggest thing that's ever happened to me. Like, I've buried my child. You know what I mean? Like, it's, I've gone through, like, some of the worst of the worst. And if I can get through that, then this is just another thing. It's another rock in the road, and I'll get over it. Mm. It's hard sometimes, but, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know you are cognizant of protecting your children's privacy, but I'm curious if you want to talk at all about your kids or being a mom.
My kids are incredible, to put it mildly. They're oh my God, they're so much like me. My older one especially, she has got an attitude with her. She just turned 13 this year, in August, and well, I guess technically last year now, but she's 13 full attitude, and she has ADHD, so she's off the walls all the time with energy, and she's got a brilliant mind, and she's hitting that teenage phase with a skid of, well, I'm going to be defiant and I'm going to have a strong personality, but you know what, the way I see it is I'm going to have to foster that with her, because it could be really rough now, but that's going to end up making her really fiercely independent later. And that's going to be really important. And I could see her doing really good things, really big things, as long as she keeps herself focused and everything. She's got a good future ahead of her, as long as she takes the lessons that I'm giving and my general lesson of my life. Because if not, you know, she can go down a way that's not going to be real great. So I've got to keep an eye on her and stuff. She's a great kid. Just she's going to need a little bit of extra TLC and attention. And then there's my youngest, who's 9. And she's a firecracker. They have her in dance right now. And she's just all over the place, dancing and kicking and flipping and doing crab walks. And it's just, my joints hurt when I see her doing it. But she's just this, like I say, she's a firecracker. She's just got this energy, like you could feel her before she walks into the room kind of thing. And she's got that, but she's also really pretty. And so it's like, I'm going to have to keep an eye on her as well, you know, and kind of, you know, don't try to get things because you're pretty, because she's already got that. Like, she knows, like, how to get stuff out of her dad. Like, oh, but daddy, and she twirls her hair and bats her big blue eyes kind of thing, you know. It's like, we have to keep her in line. But, yeah, she's going to do great things, too. And she's bright. She's brilliant. She's so smart. Yeah, they're great kids.
What's been the most challenging part of being a mother?
I think there's been a lot. There's been a lot that's been challenging. I would have to say trying to navigate all of the stuff that I've been going through, and also try to make sure that there's as little blowback as possible on the kids, because kids need stability. You know, they need you to be 100%, even if you're not, you know? And I think that's been the most difficult for me, is like, I'm literally on the inside just caving in, but I have to, you know, keep a smile, or at the very least, you know, even if they know, because the kids aren't dumb, they know if something's going on. And, you know, even, you know, it's just being able to push through that stuff and being able to bring 50% if you can't bring 100, but always bring 50%, because they need the consistency. Even if you're just like, I'm dying on the inside right now, it doesn't matter, at least bring 50%. And being open and honest with them, I think, is something that's difficult too, because I think as a parent, you want to say, oh, well, no, everything's fine. You know, we're not having money trouble. We're not having this. Oh, everything's great. I'm feeling so fine. But you're lying to your kids when you do that. And your kids know you're lying to them, because they can see on your face that you're just, something is wrong with you, and they know. And so I think finding the balance of being honest and open about that too, and letting them know, because like I said, my kid turned 13. She's going to be hitting the point where, you know, maybe she's going to come up with something. I don't know. Like, you know, maybe she has depression or something. And it's like, you know, being able to be open and honest about it for me also means that she can be open and honest about it. And so that's a thing, is, you know, learning to navigate that gap too, of being able to be open with your experience, but also not put it on them. If that makes sense. I'm not sure if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And I was going to ask you, like, what kind of conversations you do have with your kids as they've gotten older about mental illness?
Well, I pretty much told them, you know, I've tried to foster the environment that they can come and talk to me, like if anything happens or, you know, if they are feeling a certain way or whatever. But, you know, there have been times when, you know, it's difficult to even get out of bed and stuff. And it's like, you know, I'll say, well, come here and I'll explain it to you. Like, yeah. And like, I'm just having a really bad day right now. I'm in the pit. That's a phrase I use a lot, is in the pit. If I'm in the pit, we're going to just come into bed and we're just going to watch movies for a little bit until I'm feeling better or stuff like that. And I've, you know, kind of had the environment where if they need to talk about it, we can talk about it. And just kind of, I put it back on them. So it's like, well, if you have any questions, you come talk to me. And if they ask me, you know, and they've had some brilliant questions like, oh, well, what does this mean? Or did you go to the doctor about it and say, oh, yeah, I went to the doctor about it. And this is what they said, you know, what have you? Or, you know, just being able to leave it open. So because I don't want to push it on them, because I'm like, oh, your mom's depressed and this and this and this. And, you know, it might make concepts that are a little bit bigger for them to understand. Mm. So it's a matter of just kind of putting the ball in their court and saying, if you're curious, you want to know something, talk to me. And then we have a conversation that turns into something else. Based on that.
Have they asked you questions that you don't know how to answer or that you aren't ready to answer?
I think so, yeah. There's been some times where, because some stuff has happened in my older kid's life, and she's kind of asked me, you know, well, what is this going to mean for me? Well, I don't know. Like, And I told her, I said, you know, everybody's experience is different. And the way that you handle something is going to be different than the way that I handle it. If you have depression, your depression is going to be different than mine. That's just how it is. So being able to tell them, you know, like what if they have something later, what that's going to look like, I don't know. And I told them, I don't know. I'm not a doctor. So it's I'll be an open ear, but I don't know, like, how that could manifest or what, or maybe nothing at all. I don't know. But. Yeah. I don't know if I answered that correctly, but or if I answered it fully, I don't know.
Well, it sounds to me like an awareness of just that there are unknowns and you're trying to be as honest as possible and not maybe bombard them with things that they aren't ready for. So as they're coming to you, you can kind of answer and let them know.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Are there other things that you want to share today?
Well, I think, how do I phrase that? I think it's really important that when people see stuff in the news, because this is something that's been in my head a lot with the shootings we've had, if people see stuff in the news, they need to be really aware of how they're consuming it and how it's impacting their internal dialogue. Because I know that, especially recently with all the shootings and stuff like that, you know, like I say, I'm very open about my mental illness. And I've said to people, you know, oh, I'm mentally ill, or, you know, it's come up in conversation or whatever. And you can just see like a tonal shift on their face of, oh, okay. And they just kind of like side eye you and they look at you a little bit differently. And you can just see the way that they see you change. The perception is different. And so I think, you know, that's something that people need to be really aware of, is how they let what they see affect their inner dialogue of, you know, just because someone's mentally ill doesn't necessarily mean they're some drooling monster. You know, we're people, and some of us are really struggling with something, and some of us are okay, you know, we're managing. But, you know, we need to be really careful that we're not all just lumping people into this big box of crazy. You know, it's not okay. And it really bothers me a lot when I see that, when there's this narrative pushed a lot of like, oh, well, they're crazy, so they did this. Oh, of course they went and shot up a school because they're crazy. Like, can you not paint us all with that brush? That would be great if you would not do that, you know, that kind of thing. But I think it's a bigger part of just the way that society sees people that are mentally ill. And it's an attitude that needs to change. And people aren't going to be willing to change that attitude if they don't see a problem with it, or if they don't recognize that they're doing it. So, yeah, that would be my thing. Just be aware of how you're thinking. Be aware of how you're acting. Be aware of how you're allowing the media that comes into your brain to impact you and the thoughts that you're having. You know, just be very cognizant of it. Because if not, you know, your mind and your perspective will change and you won't realize it. And then someday you'll see somebody that's a homeless person talking to themselves on the street and you'll go, ew, instead of, that's a person that needs help, if that makes sense. And yeah, I don't know. I think it's a big societal thing. Mm-hmm. The way that society views people that are mentally ill, you know, that they don't see us as well. And it was like how I had mentioned earlier, to someone else, I said, you know, we went from the older days of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, this drooling monster, to being fetishized. So it used to be, oh, this is a scary person. You stay away from them. They're old Jim that are muttering and talking to themselves. And now it's become, oh, it's Dexter. And, oh, he's so sexy because he goes out and gets revenge on. And it's like, it's not sexy. Like, it's the difference between you think this girl with blonde hair and blue eyes in a wheelchair is really hot, or you thinking she's hot because she's in a wheelchair, if that makes sense. Like, don't fetishize us because we're having something different with us, you know, or like, don't, it's just we're people. We don't need to be like, you know, if, I don't know if that makes, yeah, if that is correct or what have you, or if it's a polite thing to say, but just, yeah.
I get what you're saying, kind of like media has overcompensated, but yeah, in a way that's made it like glorifying people with mental illness and not always showing the very worst parts of it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, exactly.
Which aren't necessarily like, in my opinion, it's not always the way that it's portrayed. A lot of times the mm-hmm. ugliest and the hardest moments mm-hmm. are like the nothingness and what's mm-hmm. when there's nothing happening, or when, you know, the inner dialogue that you can't really portray as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is kind of frustrating to see that, and you want to be represented and you want to see your struggles and mm-hmm. experienced by other people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not happening.
Yeah, but in a way that's not gross.
Yeah.
And I can make that comment. Like, if you feel 100% comfortable making me, like, a sex object or making me, like, sexy or fetishized because of my mental illness, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm going to feel 0% bad about making you feel weird and gross about feeling that way.
Right.
Because I've got that, like, oh, crazy chicks are hot. No. No, 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 no. Don't ever come at me like that. Because I'll make you feel weird and gross about it. That's just how it is.
Like, I think you have every right to do that.
It's just, that's been my personal experience. It's like, oh, tell me more about that. Like, dude, really? Like, you don't want to hear about my impressive book collection? Because I think that's more interesting. Like, I don't know, but...
Well, we have a couple minutes left, and mm-hmm. I'm curious if you would want to answer, how do you want people to describe you or know who you are?
I want people to see that even while things are difficult, I'm able to get by in the skin of my teeth, you know, and it's not some heroic gesture. It's not some, you know, oh, I'm some big survivor. I'm just getting by. And that doesn't make me any better or any worse than anybody else. It just makes me a person. And I think that's something that's really important to me. Just see me as a normal person. I don't need you to think I'm some great person who does this. Oh, you're surviving in spite of your... No, just don't. Just, I'm a normal person. I like the mountain goats. Like, I like the true crime novels. Like, I'm not some big... I don't know. But yeah, that's just, I'm a person. Just treat me like a person. Talk to me like I'm a person. Don't make it weird. But yeah, that'd be that.
Cool. Well, thanks for being a person and being willing to share everything that you shared today.
For sure,
nice
for sure.
To know more about who you are.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity. It was very good.
Yeah, of course. Mm.